This talk is given by a student at Ordinary Mind Zendo. In these talks, senior students explore their personal journeys, share their understanding of the Dharma, and offer encouragement to others in their practice. The talks are unique in that they present a diverse set of voices walking a common path.
So, when Chris first asked me if I'd give a talk, I said yes, knowing it would be a good thing for me to do. But inside, I was panicking. My thoughts were, I can't give a talk on Zen practice. I'm a failure at Zen practice. And this is my most frequent life koan that I bump up against. I'm a failure at, and fill in the blank, my work, being a mom, relationships. So I started doing Zazen at a pretty young age, 20 years old. I had met a group of people at a party who were all Zen students of a teacher in Western New York. For whatever reason, I felt drawn to them. And after meeting them, talking with them, et cetera, I started sitting with them. I was a bit of a gypsy in my younger years and moved around quite a bit, primarily in the Pacific Northwest and the Southwest. Wherever I was living, I'd look up people who were doing Zazen and in that way continued to practice in the company of others. Eventually, I decided I wanted to work with a teacher, but wasn't particularly drawn to the couple of teachers I had been exposed through with the other students I had been sitting with. And about that time, I heard about Joko Beck and decided I wanted to meet her. So at that time, I was living in New Mexico, which was a short and inexpensive plane ride to San Diego, where Joko had just opened up the Zen Center of San Diego. And I contacted her and asked her if I could come for a session, and she said yes, and so off I went. So up until that point, my instruction I had received for Zazen was simply to follow my breaths, counting up to 10, and then returning again and again when I lost track. So Joko had a slightly different slant on this practice, or at least the way that she instructed me. Her instructions were to follow my breath, but also to label my thoughts as they arose and to feel reactions in my body, continually coming back to the breath throughout. Not to get caught up in the labeling or analyzing my thoughts, but just to very generally note them, daydreaming, having a conversation, rehearsing, being angry, planning. For me, this practice made a radical difference. I saw for the first time that 90%, or at least that's what it felt like, of my thoughts were negative. It was shocking to me. I remember thinking, how have I accomplished anything in my life with a mind like this? It was my first real experience of Zazen being, as Barry talks about it, a mirror. You sit down and yourself is reflected back to you, like looking in a mirror. The clarity of working like this and the shock of seeing how my mind was working had a significant impact on me and planted a seed of wanting to continue to practice. The second experience, also at the Zen Center of San Diego, was after session. Once I was standing on the patio outside during our informal lunch, and I remember feeling the most like myself that I ever had. Like I felt completely comfortable in my own skin. And that was an unusual feeling for me. All my tension, my guarding, my defenses and social patterns that I so habitually did just had kind of fallen away. And I felt totally at home in myself. Of course, that changed as I got back into life, et cetera, but it was another experience that settled in me on some deep level. So fast forward 40 some odd years, and as the title of Kjogen Carlson's book that we've been working with says, and I changed the first word, I am still here. So Barry often says, Zen practice is one thing you can't do right or wrong. There is no right or wrong in practice. There's just doing it, just paying attention in each moment. So this is the hard part for me to talk about, because I can still feel like I'm a failure at Zen practice because I can sometimes feel so worthless and awful in my life. Like, I feel like that should have changed by now. God knows I have spent enough time and money doing this practice. Shouldn't I have more to show for it? Part of this deluded perspective is thinking that Zen practice should have fixed me by now. In other words, I can still get into thinking that the benefit of practice should partly be to take away or fix the parts of myself that feel broken and small. And I know it doesn't work like that. Practice for me, rather than a fix myself up approach, is more a matter of being brave enough and persistent enough to stay and to not run away from the thoughts and sensations, not only when they're neutral, but especially when those are coming up that make me feel really uncomfortable and hollow. In Joko's words in her book, Nothing Special, she says, "To be simply what we are is the last thing we want to do." These thought patterns in myself don't come from nowhere. To put things in perspective, I grew up in a household where there was love, but also a lot of tension, competition, sometimes an undercurrent of the threat of violence. And as the youngest of four, I got good at either dissociating when things got scary or gauging the situation and figuring out how I should act in order to fit in the most harmonious way without drawing attention to myself. As a result, I didn't develop trust in what I thought and felt. I didn't develop and strengthen an inner connection with myself as I was growing up. I didn't develop the trust that what I felt and thought as I was just as valid as anyone else. Instead, I developed the habit of always looking outwards at other people to see what they thought and what they were doing before I could feel good about what I was doing. So anything worthwhile or right was always to be found out there and not inside of me. In case 73 in the Blue Cliff Record, Basso and the 100 Negations, the monk asks Bashi, "What is the meaning of Bodhidharma's coming from the West?" And Bashi says, "Today I'm tired and cannot tell you. Go ask Chiso." And so the monk asked Chiso, who said, "I have a headache today and cannot tell you. Go ask Brother Kai." And so the monk asked Brother Kai, who replied, "Coming to this point, I do not understand." The monk went back to Bashi and told him all this, wherein Bashi said, "Chiso's head is white, Kai's head is black." The monk in this koan reminds me of myself, always going to other people. What do you think? What's the answer? Always looking outside myself for answers. In the commentary that follows this koan, when referring to the part, "Chiso's head is white, Kai's head is black," it says, "The rose is red, the peony scarlet. The northern mountain is high, the southern hill is low." And I add to that, "I stand 5'6" tall and my eyes are green." What I appreciate and what has been so helpful to me in the ordinary mind style of teaching is that I have been taught to not push away all the endless thoughts and sensations that arise constantly, but rather to sit still and notice, feel, breathe over and over and over and over again, to not run away from whatever is arising. I appreciate this approach because all my thought patterns, my habitual way of thinking, as it becomes clear to me, and when I get caught in these, That's the exact barrier that keeps me from experiencing the here and now absolutely. It makes me think of the line in the Sandokai, ordinary life fits the absolute as a box and its lid. Until I can see these patterns of my ordinary mind for what they are, thoughts, emotions, feelings, and in doing so, giving them the space to soften and thus diminish in strength, they will keep me from really experiencing life just as it is right here and right now. I once mentioned to Barry that it didn't seem to me that there was much spoken in Zen about self-compassion. He agreed. But what I have come to feel and notice is that in really practicing, like the last two lines of our practice principles, each moment, life as it is, the only teacher, being just this moment, compassion's way. But that way of practicing is extending compassion towards myself, in that I'm allowing myself to be as I am, even if just for a couple of seconds at a time, here and there. And as I can do that with myself more and more, then my capacity to extend that to others grows. In closing, I have to say that over the years, there have been shifts. When I get caught now, it usually doesn't last quite as long, and it isn't usually as emotionally intense as it was 20 to 30 years ago. I also have to say that in addition to Zazen, intelligent yoga and a couple of good therapists have been helpful and important partners in my journey. So when I ask myself, because sometimes I do, why do I keep sitting? Because this is a hard practice, I think. An image bubbled up inside of me of these fields of sunflowers in Kansas. And if you've ever had the wonderful experience of driving cross country in the summertime across Kansas, there are places where there are acres and acres of sunflowers. And the heads of the sunflowers from sunrise to sunset follow the sun. So they actually like move, like the whole field just moves, the heads move to stay connected to the sun. And they're nourished by the sun. And I feel like that's why I continue to sit, because on some level, I just feel nourished by practice and practicing with others. So thank you for listening.